All right, let's dive in. Today, we're tackling Phillips Petroleum Co. v. Schutz, a 1985 Supreme Court case that still matters today.
It's a landmark case.
Yeah, it really is. We're talking class action lawsuits.
Yeah.
And this case raises a really interesting question. How did a fight over gas leases, you know, way out in Oklahoma, end up changing the whole game for nationwide class actions?
Right.
And get this, we've got Phillips Petroleum, based in Oklahoma, ending up in a Kansas court. They're facing this huge group of people, over 28,000 plaintiffs.
Yeah, and that's where things get really interesting. Think about it. 97% of those people suing and almost all the gas leases involved, 99% had nothing to do with Kansas.
No connection at all.
It's like getting sued for a speeding ticket in a state you've never even been to.
Wild, right. So I'm not surprised Phillips Petroleum was upset. I mean, they argued Kansas was way out of line, pulling them into court thousands of miles away.
Yeah, they were not happy.
So it all comes down to this idea of jurisdiction. Does a court really have the power to hear a case if most of the people and the stuff that happened, you know, the events, took place somewhere else entirely?
That's exactly the question the Supreme Court had to wrestle with.
I bet.
You know, the legal idea here is something called minimum contacts. It means a court can't just randomly claim power over somebody.
Right.
There has to be a real solid connection between the person being sued and the state where the lawsuit is happening. It's like you wouldn't expect to be dragged into court in Alaska just because you bought, like, a salmon keychain online from a seller there.
No, that doesn't seem fair at all.
Right.
But hold on. How does this minimum contacts thing work when you've got this huge class action with people all over the country?
That's a good question. So this is where the Supreme Court made a really important distinction. They separated the defendants from the plaintiffs.
Okay.
So forcing a company to defend itself in some far-off state, away from their main office, their witnesses, all their documents, that's a real burden.
I can see that.
But in a class action, the plaintiffs are choosing to join in. They're actively opting in, not being forced.
Oh, that's an important point.
Yeah.
So it's less about geography and more about making sure those plaintiffs, even though they're all over the place, are getting a fair shot in that Kansas court.
You got it. That's what the court focused on. So they said Kansas could hear the case, but they had to make sure things were fair for everyone involved. Everyone in the class had to be told about the lawsuit properly.
So no one's left out of the loop.
Exactly. And they had the option to say no if they didn't want to be part of it. Plus, the court really looked closely at whether the main plaintiffs, the ones leading the charge, were doing a good job representing the whole group.
To make sure everyone's interests are being looked after.
Exactly.
So round one goes to Kansas. They get to hear the case. But wait a second. Just because they can hear it, does that mean they automatically get to use their own state laws to decide it? What about the laws of the states where those gas leases were actually signed?
You've hit on the next big issue. Choice of law.
Okay.
Could Kansas just use their own rule book on everyone, maybe ignoring the laws of other states connected to those leases?
Right.
The Supreme Court said, hold up, Kansas. Too far.
Hmm.
They decided that using Kansas law on people and contracts that had zero to do with Kansas, well, that messed with some basic rights.
Whoa, okay. What rights are we talking about here?
This is where things get really constitutional. Two big clauses come in. Due process and full faith and credit.
Okay.
Due process basically guarantees that everything's fair and reasonable in legal stuff.
Okay, that makes sense.
Full faith and credit means states have to respect each other's laws and court decisions.
Right.
These clauses are all about protecting people, making sure nobody gets steamrolled just because they're part of a big group.
So it's like checks and balances to keep things fair, even in these giant class actions.
Exactly. They drew a line. States can't just play games with their laws in these big nationwide cases.
So Kansas gets the green light to hear the case jurisdiction, but a red light on using their own laws for everyone, choice of law.
You got it.
How did the court explain that difference?
Okay, so think of it like this. Jurisdiction asks, can you even be in this court? It's about the court's power over the case. Choice of law asks, okay, now that you're here, which rule book are we using?
Oh, I see. Two different parts of the puzzle.
Yeah. It's about figuring out which state's laws actually apply to the stuff they're fighting over.
Got it. But you mentioned earlier the court wasn't all on the same page, right?
Yeah.
There was a dissenting opinion.
You're right. Justice Stevens agreed with the majority that Kansas could hear the case, but he had a different view on that choice of law issue. He thought using Kansas law wouldn't have been a problem as long as it didn't directly clash with the laws of the states where those gas leases were actually from.
So he was saying as long as there's no direct conflict between the state laws, it's all good.
Yeah, that's the gist of it. He felt that unless there was a clear head-on collision between those laws, it wasn't a constitutional problem.
Interesting. So even at the top of the legal system, there's room for different opinions on these tricky legal ideas.
Definitely. It shows that there are often gray areas, even at the Supreme Court level.
This case has got me thinking. How did this case in Kansas, with all these people from other states and all the legal back and forth, how did it end up having such a massive impact on class actions all over the country?
That's a great question, and it's a perfect lead-in to what we're going to dig into next. You see, Phillips Petroleum Co. v. Schutz didn't just settle a fight about gas leases. It created a whole new set of rules that changed the world of class action lawsuits. Phillips Petroleum Co. v. Schutz, it really shook things up in the legal world, especially for class action lawsuits.
Big time. So this case in Kansas, it had consequences all over the U.S. Like, what kind of impact are we talking about?
Well, it basically paved the way for nationwide class actions as we know them today. The court said, yeah, plaintiffs from different states, they can team up in one big lawsuit. It made these huge legal battles, well, a lot easier to actually pull off. Before Schutz, trying to get people from all over into the same courtroom, that was a real mess.
So this case gave regular folks more power. Like, they could challenge big companies nationwide, even if their individual complaints weren't that big on their own.
Exactly. It's that classic idea, strength in numbers, right? Schutz gave folks a way to join forces, pool their resources, and fight for their rights together. But here's the catch. The court also realized states could get a little power hungry.
You mean like Kansas trying to use their laws on situations that had nothing to do with them?
Bingo. The Supreme Court, when they made their decision on choice of law, they put a stop to that kind of jurisdictional overreach. It's like they set up safeguards so states couldn't just pick and choose whatever laws worked best for them, even if those laws didn't really fit the people or the situation involved.
So Schutz drew some boundaries, made things more organized for these big nationwide class actions. I'm guessing this had some pretty big consequences for both sides, the people suing and the companies being sued.
Oh, absolutely. It's like a seesaw, right? Shifting the balance of power. On one hand, it made it easier for plaintiffs to get together and hold those big corporations accountable, even for relatively small issues. Think about it. A company might ignore a few complaints here and there, but when you have thousands, maybe even millions of people coming together, well, they can't ignore that.
Yeah, I can see how that gives individuals and consumers a lot more leverage. But what about the companies on the receiving end? What kind of impact did Schutz have on them?
Well, for them, it definitely made things more complicated. Suddenly, they had to be ready to defend themselves against these nationwide class actions, which meant a lot more complexity and a lot more potential costs. Imagine having to come up with a legal strategy, find all the evidence, and deal with witnesses when the people suing you are spread out all over the country.
Logistically, that sounds like a nightmare.
It can be. Schutz basically said, hey, companies, you can't hide behind state lines anymore. They had to be prepared to face the music on a national level.
So both sides felt the impact of Schutz. But let's be real. Didn't it also open the door for some, you know, maybe some abuses of the system? What's stopping a lawyer from just picking the court that's most likely to side with them, even if it has nothing to do with the case?
You're bringing up a good point. Schutz was a big change, but it didn't get rid of all the legal maneuvering that can happen in these kinds of cases. And yeah, that idea of forum shopping lawyers trying to find the court that gives them the best advantage, it definitely became more common after Schutz. Think about it. A lawyer might think, okay, which state has the judges who are most sympathetic to these types of claims? Or the juries who are likely to award the biggest payouts?
Kind of like trying to game this system a little bit.
You could say that, but it's not always shady. Sometimes it's about finding a court that really understands the complexities of a certain type of case, mm-hmm. or making sure the trial is held somewhere that's convenient for witnesses.
So there are legitimate reasons for doing it. But where do you draw the line? When does it become unfair or manipulative?
That's the million-dollar question. The legal system has developed a bunch of rules and procedures to try and stop obvious forum shopping. Courts can actually dismiss cases if they think the plaintiff's choice of court is just meant to harass the defendant or give themselves an unfair edge. But it's tricky. It's about finding that balance between the plaintiff's right to choose where they sue and the defendant's right to a fair trial.
So even with Schutz, there's still this back and forth trying to make class actions efficient but also fair.
Right.
The case didn't magically solve everything.
Exactly. It laid down a foundation, but it also left room for things to change and adapt as new legal issues came up.
And I bet forum shopping isn't the only issue that popped up after Schutz, right?
You're right. Another big one is settlements. Because Schutz made these nationwide class actions possible, it also made these cases a lot more complex and a lot higher stakes. Now, you had lawsuits with thousands, sometimes even millions of people, all asking for compensation for similar problems. Going to trial with these cases could take years and tons of money, and it was really unpredictable for both sides.
Yeah, I can see how that would make settling out of court a much more attractive option. It's like making a deal to avoid a long, drawn-out legal battle.
Yeah.
But how do you stop companies from offering really low settlements, knowing they have more power in these complicated cases?
That's where the courts have a big role to play. One of the key things that came out of Schutz, and this applies to all class actions, not just the national ones, is that judges have to make sure settlements are fair. Remember those due process concerns we were talking about? Well, the court realized that in class actions, individual people might not have the means or the motivation to really examine a settlement offer. So Schutz emphasized that judges have to be like guardians for the whole class, making sure any settlement is actually good for everyone involved.
So it's not just a situation where the companies can call all the shots and the plaintiffs have to just accept whatever they offer.
Nope. Schutz led to a much stricter process for approving settlements and class actions. Judges can say no to settlements they think are unfair or not good enough, and they can even hold hearings where people in the class can speak their minds and maybe even challenge the terms of the deal.
This is getting pretty complex. It sounds like there are a lot of steps and considerations when it comes to these class action settlements.
For sure. It's a multi-stage process with lots of checks and balances to ensure everything is above board.
Okay, so Schutz paved the way for nationwide class actions, brought more focus to forum shopping, and highlighted how important it is for judges to keep an eye on settlements. What else has come out of this landmark case? What's its legacy?
Well, Schutz was definitely a big win for plaintiffs in a lot of ways, but it also sparked some pushback and some folks trying to counter its effects.
Really? What kind of pushback are we talking about here?
Well, Schutz basically made it easier to use class actions as a tool, a powerful tool, and that worried some folks, especially businesses and industry groups. They started feeling like it was way too easy for people to join forces and file these massive lawsuits, even if their individual gripes were pretty small.
So, kind of like Schutz had this unintended consequence. The pendulum swung too far towards the plaintiffs.
Yeah, you could say that. In the years after Schutz, there was this whole movement to kind of pull things back, rein in what some saw as, like, too many class action lawsuits.
Okay, so what were they trying to do? Did they want to completely overturn Schutz?
Not necessarily overturn it completely, but they definitely wanted to limit its reach, make it harder to file certain types of class actions. And one of the main battlegrounds was, well, the legislature.
Ah, so taking it to the lawmakers.
Exactly. Some states, especially ones that were more friendly towards businesses, they started passing laws that made it tougher to file class actions in their courts. They created more hoops to jump through, made it stricter to get a class certified, and even put limits on how much money could be awarded in certain cases.
So it's like a tug of war, with states trying to shift the balance back towards the defendants.
But wait, didn't Schutz involve federal law? Like a constitutional question? Can states just ignore a Supreme Court ruling like that? That's a really good point, and it shows how complicated things can get between federal and state law. Remember, Schutz set up some big constitutional boundaries, but it also left some wiggle room for states. States have a lot of control over their own court systems. They can definitely pass laws that make it harder to file certain lawsuits, class actions included. As long as those laws don't directly clash with the Constitution, they're usually okay.
It's like a game of chess, everyone making their moves within the rules. It's amazing how one Supreme Court case can create so much action, both legally and politically.
It really does. It shows how our legal system is always changing. Schutz didn't give a final answer. It opened up a whole new chapter in how we think about and deal with class action lawsuits.
So let's bring this home. What does all this mean for the average person? You know, someone who might join a class action or even find themselves being sued in one. What's the big takeaway from all this?
I think the biggest takeaway is class actions are a powerful way to hold companies accountable, but they're not perfect, and it's not always simple. Schutz made them more accessible, but it also created a lot of counter moves and complexities that can make these cases tricky.
It's not just a matter of signing your name and waiting for a check in the mail.
Exactly. If you're thinking about joining a class action, you really got to do your homework. Understand the potential benefits and risks. talk to a lawyer, maybe, just to make sure you know what you're getting into.
And I imagine companies have to be way more careful these days, right? Knowing that a nationwide class action could hit them at any moment.
For sure. Shuts changed the game for businesses. They had to start being extra cautious about how they do things, knowing that even small issues could turn into big legal trouble if enough people banded together.
So the effects of shuts went way beyond the courtroom. It changed how companies act, how aware consumers are, even the political landscape.
You got it. This case wasn't just about gas leases in Oklahoma. It changed how we view corporate accountability, access to justice, the whole role of the courts in our society.
This deep dive has been amazing. I feel like I understand not just the Phillips Petroleum Cummy Schutz case itself, but also how it continues to shape the legal world even today.
Glad to hear it. It's a case that sometimes gets overlooked, but it had a huge impact, that's for sure.
Thanks for joining us as we explored Phillips Petroleum Cummy Schutz. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And the next time you hear about a class action lawsuit, remember there's a whole lot of history behind it. A story that goes all the way back to a courtroom in Kansas back in 1985.